Hello, everybody. My name is Ken Fallon, and you're listening to Hacker Public Radio Community News. This is a monthly look at what's been going on in the HPR community, or at least a little bit of it that I get to see. Today, I'm joined by, starting from the top, Fake Dave. Say hi, Fake Dave.
Hi, Fake Dave.
5150. Say hi, 5150.
Hi, 5150.
Ken Fallon. Say hi, Ken Fallon.
Hi, Ken Fallon.
Needle Lady Blue.
Hi, Ken Fallon.
And Pokey.
I want to say hi to Code Cruncher, because I haven't seen her in a while. Hi, Code Cruncher.
Yeah, hi, Code Cruncher. Where have you been?
And congratulations on the new job.
Yeah? Where'd you get the new job?
I'm not sure. I never read the LinkedIn things. It just is in the heading of the email.
Yeah. Am I connected to her on LinkedIn or not? I need to do this. Anyway, yes, moving back. There were no new hosts this month. That is very sad. It makes me cry. Why? Why are you abandoning HBR? Why?
Short month, Ken. Short month.
Okay, fair enough. Anyways, let's start off by going through the shows. And in a break from tradition, the first Monday of the month, we didn't have community news, largely because the community is admin leaves a lot to be desired. And he forgot that he had recorded the show the Saturday before the Monday and forgot to post it. So we had Intro to OpenStreetMap by Pokey. Pokey, this was very interesting.
Ah, but was it any good?
Yes, it was, actually. Now, I have a question for you. Since they posted the show, there has been an update to the editing tool. Has that had any effect on your show?
I have heard there was an update to the editing tool. I haven't seen it myself because I think the new editing tool's the same as the old one. I don't see a difference, or I haven't gotten it yet. I don't know.
Okay. There was one thing I wanted to mention in that show, and that was that the satellite imagery is only available, I think, in the UK. Or, sorry, in the US.
Really? Even if you can switch it. It doesn't have to be the Bing imagery. There's a couple other sources, and you can change it. Had I known that it wasn't available everywhere, I would have talked about how to change that.
Oh, okay. Follow-up episode in our future, I see.
Yeah, it's entirely possible.
And I've already told Pokey inspired me to get on there because they're doing some new construction around here. There's an overpass a mile away that I didn't realize that so many details have to be changed to make that not look like an intersecting road. So inspired doesn't mean I've actually done it yet, but I intend to do lots of stuff.
Yes, thank you very much, Pokey, for now making me feel even more guilty about stuff. Thank you very, very much.
Well, it takes a lot of details to change something like that, but once you get used to it, it really does not take a lot of time. It's like anything that once you learn it, it's real easy to do. And I just think that the OpenStreetMap, my experience with it was the first time I tried it, I was so lost. There was so much to this program. The editor, anyway, the online editor, that didn't make any sense to me at all. And everything I thought I did just seemed to screw up something that someone had done before me, and I was so nervous about messing up someone else's work. And it seemed like the learning curve was a wall straight up without a ladder on it. So, you know, I thought that little tutorial was enough to get you over that initial hump. It wasn't like the be-all, the end-all, or it's not going to make you an expert or anything, but it's a great place to start, I thought. I mean, those were the...
No, it is. And it went very far in explaining it to me. In fact, it's one of the episodes that I've paused and actually listened to it behind the computer, because that really helped.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I said at the beginning, is listening to it without looking at a computer wasn't going to help anybody.
Well, I did listen to it without a computer first, and then... But it's still
And it didn't help you at all, did it?
Well, no, it did, because I have edited some OpenStreetMap stuff before.
Oh, right on, okay.
Here in the Netherlands, there was a company that went out of business, and a mapping company, and before they went out of business, they donated their entire database to OpenStreetMaps. So it's the coverage is pretty good, but you can still go in and, you know, just do things like turn things into a bicycle path that were a straight through road and stuff like that. So that is exactly what I wanted to be able to do.
Oh, that's really great. No, I'd only gotten a couple of feedbacks on it. I heard from you, and I heard from Dave, and from 5150, and I heard from one guy who's outside of our community. He had contacted me separately on the through OpenStreetMaps. I didn't even know, but they have their own little messaging system. And he contacted me about something else completely different. And I sent him a link and just asked, hey, is this going to help? And he wrote back and he said, yes. And he said, but really what we could use right now are street numbers. If you can, you know, label the houses with street numbers. And I'm looking at it and I'm going, man, you live in a different neighborhood than I do, because we don't even have buildings in our, you got to label the buildings. So like we don't even have the streets right here yet. I said, let me see what you've done. And he sent me a link to like a college campus that, I mean, you could see the little break areas in the middle of the buildings, you know, when they make a circular shaped building with a, you know, grass and trees in the middle. You could see all that. Yeah. So like I'm like, yeah, maybe where you're at, but where we're at, we still need the streets completed. So
like some places in Germany, they have like the benches marked with the names of the people who donated the benches.
Which is excellent. I mean, honestly, can you think of a better way to, you know, to contribute to honoring someone? And you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, I'm convinced. I'm 100% convinced.
It makes me want to donate a bench somewhere.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
If I may interject, if I'm correct, the company which did the donation of the Dutch map was AMD, and from the looks of their website, they seem to be quite still in business. So,
fair enough.
Ken, I just want to say that that was, I thought the OpenStreetMap, I guess, Hey Pokey also, was a really a great episode. And I looked into also this other open source program called GPS Babel. It's for converting routes into tracks and some other things, and waypoints into tracks. And that's another whole area that can be got into that can be helpful and useful in OpenStreetMap for getting the world mapped.
And we look forward to your show in the upcoming period.
Oh, it actually, thank you for saying that, Dave, because I don't know if I mentioned it or not, but if you do want to do some tracking, like if you got an area that doesn't show up in satellite imagery and you want to do some tracking, there's a really, really good Android app, and I don't know if I mentioned it or not in the episode, but OSM Tracker is available in the Android market as well as the F-Droid market, so like you don't even have to use proprietary, you know, Android market. If you want it, you can get it right out of the F-Droid market, and it is fantastic. It lets you record your track. It lets you view a map of where you've been, so you can, like, out in the woods, it's really handy. You can find your way back to the car just by, you know, by knowing where you're at. You need that and a compass, and you're all set. And it also lets you take notes along the way and make waypoints, and it's really, really good. Oh, and it will also upload, it'll convert the track into a GPX file for you, so you can save it separately, and it will upload the track to OpenStreetMap for you, so that, like, I do that before I even get home. All my hikes are already plotted on OpenStreetMap.org.
Okay, let's move on, if we may,
to yep, episode. Sorry.
No, not at all. Episode 1178, and CT again putting me to shame by releasing interviews that from a conference, and this was Craigington and Rigo about PyPy. Were you? Do any of you use Python and PyPy in particular?
I don't run it like specifically, and I don't write, you know, programs for Python, but I've had a look at a couple of things in Python, and I've been able to do some stuff with it. The program I found had some really well-documented code, and I was able to, you know, figure out what I was supposed to do with that just by reading the comments. But I followed the Python news for a while, and the PyPy news, I mean, it's been around for a while, and it just seems to be getting better and better, and I thought it was a great interview. It was really fun to listen to.
Yeah, and I don't write any Python code right now either, but I've been wanting to learn more of it as a way of getting back into coding, and also I've been trying to nudge the school I work for into interest in the Raspberry Pi update and see if they might want to play with that in the science department. And I'm feeling if I nudge them into that, I'm going to want to have sort of a leg up on Python, because they're going to turn around and look at me and say, okay, how do we work this? And I don't want to have to say, well, there's the curriculum or the manual or whatever, read that.
The other easy solution to that 5150 is teach them how to use IRC first.
There's a few of those channels I don't think I want to turn loose on. Certainly not in the Dev Random.
No, I know. I was kidding completely.
Okay, and the following day was another interview, and this time it was Mark A. Davis of TWUUG, which was supposed to be released a week earlier, and the epic fail that I am, forgot to release it. So apologies to Mark and Frank for completely missing that. But this was a very interesting, it's kind of like how I got into Linux type talk here on HPR. So I really enjoyed that show. Then the next day we had Talk Geek to Me newscast from the Talk Geek to Me news team. And just an announcement that Deep Geek has personal life has come up and smacked him across the face, so he'll be taking a slight vacation from HPR for a while. So we expect him back, and all our thoughts and prayers, if they apply, are with him from us.
Yeah, I got that too, as you'd imagine, and I've tried a couple times to sit down and try to put together some news stories just to keep it at least on life support till he gets back, and I'm so far behind in everything I'm doing right now, I just can't pull it together. So I apologize that I'm not able to fill in his shoes while he's gone, but it's on that list of things I wish I could get done.
I don't know if people realize how much work is involved in putting that show together. It's an amazing body of work, and it's been a backbone for HPR for quite a while that we could rely on that 4 shows a month from Deep Geek.
Yeah, definitely. And I was trying to give other people a chance to talk, because I know I talk too much, but I did want to say that the TWUUG group show was really fantastic. I enjoyed the heck out of that one as well. It was a great story, and it was a great sort of trail of breadcrumbs for someone to follow, you know, for their own similar endeavors. It was really good.
I must say, I never get tired of those how you came from there to here stories. It's amazing to me. Okay, the following day we had Del Wynn, the John Wayne of HPR, although Fake Dave sounded very much like John Wayne earlier on. But all you Americans sound the same to me anyway, so with mumble audio issues.
We all look the same too if you did. We were in the same room.
Do you? Yeah, really?
Oh yeah, you can't even tell us apart, mate.
Yeah. Anyway, this was another one in the oh my god, I'm embarrassed I use mumble because I had no clue that this amount of settings was possible. But it definitely helped me with getting some of my settings sorted out here in mumble. So that will be added to the list of go-to troubleshooting issues from Mumble.
This is one that, if those little credit card-sized CDs were still, you know, readily available, I'd burn this episode to those and just hand them out to people. It was that useful.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I probably ought to forward one to every podcast that uses Mumble now. It might help some people.
Yeah, exactly. There's... we have the link to it on his original one on the main page, so I need to put a link to this one in as well. It's on my to-do list as well, just right after editing OpenStreetMap.
Well, speaking of editing the page around, Ken, I have nothing but good things to say about the changes that you guys have all made on the back end to the website. As a by the way, I mean, how quickly it loads now when you expand it to show all the shows on one page, and just it's so much faster and easier to use, and the slight visual tweaks have made it was hard to find them. I couldn't point out what was different. It just was better, but it's really tremendously better. Sorry for rattling it again.
Yeah, not at all. There have been some changes. Yeah, well, let's chat about that. I suppose we could do it later on if you want, or we could do it now.
No, let's do that later. I didn't mean to sidetrack us. The folks who put in shows, we should give them their due first.
Absolutely. And speaking of people, we had Dan Sexy Yates on. Dan Sexy Washko. But Dave Yates could do it, coming back on and giving us a show, by the way. That would be nice, a catch-up episode from Dave. He was giving us the date command, and I was thrilled to see that he put options in to get UTC and also, of course, options in to get the own and the only time format, and that is ISO thingy, which I can't remember now because my brain has just shut down for the evening.
Just for the record, Ken, I think that date is not a social media site to get a date, is it?
No, it is not. And if you go to xkcd.com/1179, you'll see what I'm on about. It's ISO 8601. Link will be in the show notes.
I'm guessing that means year, month, day, hour, what? Minute, second.
Absolutely.
Funny thing is, I thought I invented that because I had never seen anybody do it that way before, and it's obviously the right way to do it if you're trying to sort anything.
Yeah, obviously. But obvious, it's not obvious to everybody. Like there was a very interesting FOSDEM, I think, show about log file times, and just across the various different applications, you know, Apache has its own, email has its own, but anyway. That's my personal peeve. Anyway, getting back to the shows, we had Dan with the date, and then the following day we had the Boise Lug meeting, which was Darren gave us a talk on gaming focused on Vaboom for Doom, which was...
Holy smokes, can you pronounce that like a local?
Wow, thank you.
It was very interesting, but the audio was really quiet, so I had to listen to it at home instead of in the car, which I usually do. I had put up the volume at maximum, and it had no effect.
Yes, that would be, again, my fault, TM.
And I'd like to throw in that for those folks who haven't been listening to HPR for more than a couple years, that used to be sort of a regular contribution from two or three lugs. That there's several of the old episodes that are just a recording of a lug meeting, and I think a lot of those topics would be of interest to all of us to hear. I mean, if you're in a lug and somebody's doing a presentation and nobody minds being recorded and explain to them what HPR is, I'm sure they know what a podcast is, and that's a great way to generate material.
Absolutely, and so long as they, of course, want to release it under the Creative Commons by SA license. But you have a point, and if you are doing that and you want to record some lug shows, I mean, if the topic's going to be quite interesting, then get in touch with us on the Oddcast Planet on freenode.net, and we'll give you some tips on how best to record it, and so that you don't have the difficulty in hearing. But in that show, I could have done more to edit the levels better. And the next day was one of my favorite shows from the month, and that was Installing Linux Without a Monitor. And Pokey, I think you just, he really hit the nail on the head here on this one to describe what Jonathan has done. If you just turn off, if you put this podcast on pause, you will, for 15 minutes, you will hear what it would be like for somebody who doesn't have access to Sonar or one of the accessible distributions. Because they just simply cannot use a computer without having somebody there to help them. And can you imagine what life would be like not being able to use a computer? Whatever about being in a computer as an assistive technology to make life better for you, you simply not being able to use a computer in this day and age is laughable. You kind of laugh at somebody if they're, I saw a cartoon the other day saying, wake up, it's not the 80s, there's no excuse for not using a computer, for saying you can't use a computer. Well, this is a pretty good excuse if your computer isn't accessible to you to be able to use it. So I was fascinated by this interview, and thanks to Klaatu for doing the intro on that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I don't know if I had it so finally narrowed down in my head when I did it, but I think what really bothers me about it is not the fact that there's a whole bunch of people who can't use computers, because I mean, there are days where I wish I couldn't, but the thing that bothers me is that while it's necessary that you kind of have to use a computer these days, the part that bothers me is nobody cares that there's a bunch of people
who can't
use computers. That's the part that really gets
to me.
Yeah, I'd like to nominate Pokey for some sort of a medal for taking this on, and I really enjoyed the show, and it really gave an in-depth look at what Sonar is doing, and I'm sure it'll be much improved in the future, but that was just one of the highlights for me for my listening month, was hearing Pokey and Jonathan go through this.
And it,
well, I think...
sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I think, Pokey, you guys really hit the nail on the head that the whole crux of the problem is that this accessibility should be built in at the developer tools level, so that all you have to do is flip a switch and then a menu is read to you as you go through the selections. One of the things that struck me was when you guys were on the desktop and sort of waving the mouse around to find icons, and that seems like something that was built for visual people that really, really doesn't translate well at all, because you're sort of out there hunting in the wilderness to find what you're looking for, and some sort of more ordered interface would to replace it would be far preferable, I would guess.
I mean, sorry, Buggy, go on.
No, go ahead, please.
I've been thinking about this. A lot of the upcoming episodes have a prefix from me where I'm talking about how well the project is doing. And I would like to thank everybody really sincerely who have contributed to the Sonar project. And I would also like to thank people who contributed to the ACF. And it has been a bit of an eye-opener to me as I, publicized this. People's reaction to, to contributing to a project that will help accessibility.
How do you mean? What's been the reaction to that?
Well, there's been... I assumed... Now, maybe it's because my wife works with people with disabilities, and that I've kind of been exposed to it, or I don't know what. But the apathy to it has been one thing, and the hostility from certain people who I was kind of shocked about. And I'm not talking about my discussion with anybody on Twitter, because those have been constructive. Webmink have been having a constructive conversation about where best to put the money and the effort. So I don't think he was in any way, that conversation in any way is not what I'm referring to. I'm referring to private conversations I've had with different people, in order to kind of ask them, can you maybe promote the project a bit? And just the apathy, no reply, and complete silence I got from quite a lot of people was a bit of an eye opener to me.
Yeah, I was kind of blown away by the hostility that you guys got from the Vine people.
Well, I think Jonathan probably will be able to tell us more about that, and I don't know how constructive it is, but I'll tell you, folks, it's going to be an uphill battle for him and other people who are doing this. Now, I will accept that this is the Sonar project, it's a distribution, but I always assumed that the work was for the ACF and not necessarily the Sonar project, because on Indiegogo you need to be doing something actually. But the whole point of upstream to me is, well, you fix something and it goes upstream and then it comes downstream to everybody, regardless of regardless if somebody has another distribution or whether, whether you're Ubuntu or whether you're Debian or whatever, if it's fixed upstream, everybody gets it. So all the better for that. But so those are conversations that, yes, that's fine to have. But it's kind of like I always assumed that people will want to put in accessibility into every single product for everybody. The fact that it's there shouldn't be an issue. The fact that you don't use it, it shouldn't be an issue. It should at least be an option for everybody to have it.
Ken, I agree with you, and I think that for myself, when I saw this project was up on Indiegogo, and I haven't really contributed to Indiegogo projects before, but I like to contribute to something where I know someone is doing something honestly. A lot of times you see people asking for money, say even on the street or coming to your house, you don't know that there's honestly something going on that is worth supporting. And in this case, I think that Jonathan's efforts, because he's giving upstream and because he is actually blind himself and he can do something that's really useful, but this was a good project. And I actually thought I would just have to donate one time. So I donated enough to get a sticker plus a little bit and ended up donating two more times because we just didn't seem to get the people donating that I thought we would. I thought we'd be way over the goal. And I'm a little surprised at that myself. And so I really do support Jonathan in his efforts. And it's a pioneer project. So it might be that it takes somebody working in obscurity for a bit in order to get this going and to make it work.
That's you just think about it, guys. I've been exposed to people who, you know, I just can't do my wife's work. I really couldn't. Emotionally, I just, you know, she's gone into classes where, you know, there's beautiful little girls who, you know, are now the same age as, you know, then would be the same age as my daughter is now. And, you know, she's got 2 years to live. And, you know, the joy that she's bringing to the world and the joy that these people bring to the world, or you go down to the deaf community and it's, you expect, you know, going into a deaf organization, you, the first time, you expect it to be the quietest place ever, and it's loud and there's kids screaming and everybody's acting like they hear nothing, which of course they don't, because they hear nothing. So it's like, it was just a shock. And only the other day I was in like a deaf school and I was just so embarrassed I couldn't talk to these people. I think Klaatu mentioned that in his rant. But I know deaf people can read on the screen, but can we not enable them and help them to, you know, get a Raspberry Pi and connect it up to a you know, text to enable their house with X11 sensors to turn on the light when the phone rings, and all these pieces of kit that are extremely expensive to use. You know, that's just enabling technology right there. All we ask is that you know, they get enough of a, we bootstrap them enough that they can take it from there. You know what I mean? Sorry, going off on the rant.
No, you're right on the money here. I mean, after that, recently, just last week, a buddy of mine called me, and I've talked about him before in this computer, but he had asked me to buy a computer at one point for him and again for his wife and set them up with, you know, some Linux distribution on there. And since doing that, she has had to have a brain surgery, and she can't really use her right hand all that well. And she, what it boils down to now is, I mean, she can't use the laptop the way that it is because her left hand kind of drags across the touchpad and moves the mouse all over the screen every time she tries to reach to type. So, like, I can't even figure out how to disable the touchpad. And I'm sure I could. I'm not close enough to him that I can look at the computer. But, you know, to me, that was like a perfect place to put an on-screen keyboard, or maybe to set up the eye tracking or something. You know what I mean? Like, if this stuff were a little more every day to us, that I probably could have, you know, fixed it immediately. But
yeah, there's a setting in those trackers that you can make them really slow to respond. But that's exactly it. There's like, we're funding here, the ACF is funding that sort of thing that makes it more obvious to people, so that, you know, I don't know what he's going to do with the money, but wouldn't it be nice that we to get to a place where there are IRC channels where people can go, look, my just, you go onto this IRC channel and you describe exactly what the thingy is, and somebody gets back to you, oh yeah, well, what you can do is you can go into the accessibility settings and turn this off and turn that off. Okay, thank you very much, I'll go do that. You know, I want to get to that stage. And it doesn't matter what distro you're in, you know, it will be there right across the board, whether you're using Sonar or whether you're using Ubuntu or whatever, that the accessibility menu would be available to everybody.
Ken, I'm a little embarrassed. I would have to say that some of the companies who make lots of money on computer systems aren't actually working on this themselves and donating it as open source and free and open source software, because this just seems like helping people should be what we're after, to make everyone's life better as we have a good life. And I really do support Jonathan again, and I'll say that. And this is a great project, and I hope people continue to fund this project.
Don't ever be embarrassed for the lack of corporate ethics in the world, because you spend a lot of time being embarrassed. Don't do that, Dave.
Anyway, I'd like to move on if we can.
Yeah, please.
And as a nice change, we had Jezra and my Bill just shooting the breeze. And from my point of view, they can come on and shoot the breeze as much as they like. You know, I really enjoyed this show.
Yeah, I don't know if I said it in the comments, but if I didn't, I had meant to. But these are two guys who I could just listen to them read the phone book or the dictionary. They're just, I love these guys. They're great guys.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I said the exact same thing last year, and of course, I've been hanging out with them for longer than that over on the Linux Outlaws forum. So yeah, if you guys have the time, there's a lot of the two man shows that have gone by the wayside and you're come up and gone away. So I'd think for another one. So at any time you guys want to sit around and talk, listen to you.
Absolutely, here too. The following day we had a show where Dave Whitman helped us by bringing Sonar to the fore, and Pokey give us a little bit of a rundown of what was going on with the install. But as you were going through the install, you ran into problems. I just think that highlights the fact that, well, you know, if Jonathan hadn't done the work that he did and all the other people behind, you know, doing Orca and all the rest, you would never have gotten that far. At least you got somewhere.
Yeah, and even Ubuntu, I've got to say. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of the Ubuntu distribution, but I mean, even the work that they've done with it was their installer that is accessible, you know? I mean, that's kind of what made it possible in the first place. But in this particular show, I know it was last minute, I know it was short notice, but we put a call out to the community on the mailing list to have people send in, you know, something about Sonar, something, you know, putting some support behind it and trying to just help us out one more time, or some feedback. And we got a real small amount of feedback from that. We didn't get much participation. And it's just, for you guys who are just listening and not sending shows in and didn't, you know, call in, we're seeing that everywhere with HPR right now. There's a lack of participation. And we're running desperately low on shows, and I don't think anybody wants to see it languish again the way that it did a few years ago. And I don't think anybody's going to be willing to stand by and watch that happen. And Ken's discussed it before, where if the queue runs out, that's it. He says we shut down. I mean, I don't see anybody else stepping up to say I'm not going to let that happen. So please just take that as a wake-up call, maybe, that we need some contribution here. We need some more shows.
Well, yeah, I've said it before, and I think what's happened this month, and I'm really glad with the new queuing system, we're putting in rebooting speech subsystems. We're putting in shows based on last come, first served, I guess, would be. Whoever has not released the show in the longest possible time doesn't kind of roll off the tongue. If you can come up with a better description, I'd appreciate it.
Last in, first out, right? Works just like my email box.
Okay, last in, first out. Okay, fair enough.
Anyway, I love the new cube. It's great.
It is nice, and I know Dave has been working on, Dave Morris, that is, from Scotland, my QA, head of QA for HPR. I've got Dave to thank. So I put a few bash scripts together, just kind of seeing how the queuing will work out. But if you go to the calendar page now, folks, you'll be able to see where your show is and when it's encoded, and the order and whose show comes out next, because... previously, I just did whatever the oldest show was, and then put that out regardless. But now I kind of need to check and see who has put in the show. If a show comes up to the FTP server, it immediately gets sent out if the host hasn't posted a show in a while, which is why you have Tissawab coming out before Frank Bell, for instance. So yes, Frank has done quite a few shows recently. So there you go. So what actually means right now, for instance, we have 16 shows in the queue, which is great. We have 16 shows, but those are only from four hosts.
I want to ask, since we got 5150 here and he's a quarter of those four hosts, 5150, how do you feel about the new queue, since you seem to be, there's the upside to it is that if somebody throws a show in and they haven't done it in a while, they're pretty much at the head of the queue. The downside is for a guy like you who's put all these shows out, yours get pushed back. So how do you, the guy who's actually doing contribution here, how do you feel about it?
Well, I wasn't going to say anything about that, but I'm kind of glad you brought it up. There, you know, we could look at it in theory, if we were getting the number of shows in, we're getting at this time last year, and somebody like me contributes two or three shows in a row, as I tend to do, in theory, those could just be pushed back, perpetually, I guess. If we're getting the number of shows we ought to be getting in, and I contribute four shows, those could be my four shows for the year if the queue was working the way, if we're getting in shows the way it ought to be. So might be fair for some sort of time limit before you drop the, 6 months or 3 months or whatever, that we clear those out. But I hate to get back into that whole argument again, because no solution is going to be perfect in every case and suit everybody.
Right. But I mean, I guess I was just asking, I don't know. I guess it really hasn't had too much effect yet. But you're the guy that's putting in all the shows right now, you and Ahuka. So I thought I'd ask. And not disturb the plot. You're right. I'm sorry. I probably shouldn't have asked it publicly.
But Ken, I have noticed that on the mailing list the last couple weeks, it's sort of been like, well, if nobody contributes a show, I'm going to make you listen to 5150 and Ahuka.
No, it was purely intended as 5150 and Ahuka are the backbone of HPR right now. They're guys are carrying HPR.
It can't be like that, because we all like to listen to Ahuka.
Oh, that hurt!
He knows I'm teasing. We're buddies.
Well, when it gets to the one that came out this week, that's not the one that I'm proudest of, definitely. In fact, I would have put that on break glass and emergency list. But at the time, there were only 15 shows in the queue, or at least it showed up in the queue when I contributed. So I thought, oh man, we're going to be out in a week. We better put that one in.
Yeah, exactly. But I think, Frank, at the same time, what will happen is that, to give the counter argument to what will happen, if people contribute shows, if somebody else contributes four shows, only one of their shows is going to get played, and the other three are also going to be held. It's not like as soon as their first show goes out, they're back to the back of the queue again. So, yes, in theory, if everybody contributed, you would have to wait for a year for your shows to come out, but that unfortunately ain't going to happen. And with this way, everybody gets a shot at putting in the shows. So you get one show, and then you go back to the, you get your ticket and you go stand at the back of the line again, and then the next person comes in and they go back to the back of the line. And eventually, there will come a point where, like, there's only 200 and we have only 175 active hosts anyway. So the absolute maximum you're ever going to have to wait is 176 days, 176 slots.
When I was a kid, my mom said, if you haven't got anything nice to say, then don't say anything at all. And I think Garjola's mom must have told him the same thing, because he has only ever said nice things to people. And his show on the next day, I Live in GNU Emacs, was really, it's great to hear from Garjola. He's a great guy.
Oops.
Yeah, and while
that was a really strange transition there, Ken. Sorry.
Sorry, 5150 for going off on one there. Obviously, we've been moved on by Pokey.
Yeah, and I just wanted to throw in there. I mean, yeah, I'm not an Emacs user, but I think that show and the next one from Claw 2 are very interesting. I'm probably not. It's not something I'm ever going to use, but I'm glad somebody has the knowledge of it and passes it along. So that's listening to those shows is about as close to Emacs as I would like to get. But
I'm with you.
Hey, but what other network on the planet are you going to get two Emacs shows in a row from? Come on.
And the second one was Urmail in Emacs, and that was Tlatu, who by happy accident had sent in another Emacs show. It's amazing. But I, listening to both of these shows, I was thinking, you know that joke about Emacs being an operating system? I am beginning to get that now.
Yeah.
How do you mean joke?
Exactly. But tell me, Nido, do you use Emacs?
No, I'm a VI user myself.
No, Nido, the joke is Emacs is a great operating system, if only it had a good text editor.
Yeah, I'm just not getting the part where that's actually a joke instead of the truth.
It absolutely sounds like that, yeah. Okay, the ring of fail continues. The following day was Charles and NLNJ, and I, of course, had to edit in for this entire thing of the for each of these shows that were during the Sonar project promotion period. Each of the shows, I put in an update at the beginning, which meant I had to re-encode all the shows every evening and do the little spiel and give the updates and all that sort of thing. And of course, like a Nuno that I am, I picked up the first version of the show that he had sent in, and then later on he sent in an edited version. And of course, I put out the wrong one. But as a happy thing of fate, we were able to resend that down. But I do apologize to everybody who got two shows coming in. But and also thanks to Dave for reminding me to put in edited on the show notes and then the ID3 tags and stuff like that.
Ken, I really like the math show, and thank you to Charles, and I guess it's New Jersey or NJ for doing that, and I hope he does some more shows with mathematics. It's a great addition, I think, to our queue.
I couldn't agree more. In fact, I know he says you weren't listening at maths, but I've always struggled with maths, always, and I'm not saying I'm enjoying these shows, but I am going along with them.
Oh, man, I couldn't disagree with you more, Ken. I used to love math in grade school and junior high, and when I got to high school, I had some personal problems and was real stressed out as a kid, and you know, everybody is, whatever, but I was so good at math at that point that I figured I didn't have to pay attention in class, and I slept through an entire year of math, and I was never able to catch up again, and since then it's just been a tremendous frustration for me. And Charles is reminding me what I loved about math and what I enjoyed about it. And I just, you know, Charles in New Jersey, thank you so much for that. These have been terrific shows, just two fantastic shows in a row. Really, really good stuff.
And if anybody out there skipped over them because they thought, oh, this isn't going to be something I'm going to be interested in, I promise it will not make your head hurt as much as you think.
Not as much as you think, no. But you would do well to follow the links in the show notes. There are full links, fantastic show notes, and there's a spreadsheet, GNUmeric spreadsheet, as well as an XLS. And there's the whole thing is downloadable as a zip file from that. So cool.
Yeah, but don't feel that you need to. I listened to this thing while I was snow blowing my driveway. We got about 5 feet of snow the day that came in, and I listened to it while snow blowing the driveway, and I was able to follow along perfectly with the way that he explained it. He did such a good job.
He did an excellent job, yes. But for those of us who are not math experts.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not a math expert. I dropped out of math in ninth grade, which would be maybe Algebra 2. I mean, I just dropped out of it. I went to sleep and I never woke up again. I never took, you know, trigonometry or calculus or any of that. I don't even understand advanced algebras because of what I did, you know, the mistake that I made back then. And I was still, he explained this so well. It was really beautiful. I can't say enough good things, but I'll stop for the sake of the length of the show here.
I'm really enjoying the fact that these type of highly specific shows are coming on, well researched, well presented. It's fantastic. You know, people doing the work, putting the work in.
And can I see an intersection here between a hookah's
and that brings us, yeah, and that brings us up to 1190.
But I see an intersection here between LibreOffice, Calc, maybe, and this Charles in New Jersey with his math.
you could be right. And just to go on about well-researched, well-presented shows, you have to hand it to Hooker as well for this whole LibreOffice series, which is really prompting me to get a separate per series RSS feed thing finished. That's what I was alluding to last month when we made the changes for the RSS feed. I put in some changes that will allow us to do that per feed, that you'll be able to, I like that. I came in at, episode 3. Oh, he has a series. Let me just subscribe to that on the feed reader.
This series of shows, while I have listened to them on the go, this is one that I need to sit in front of a computer to do right, and I just haven't had the time. But I have been saving these. I've been moving them into a special folder on my MP3 player, and I've got all the Ahuka shows in there. And when I can sit down and learn something again, these are on, they're at the top of my playlist.
There was one.
Yeah, I have.
Go ahead.
I was going to say. Again, this is another thing that I didn't think that I would be that terribly into, but every one of these, I have learned something. And because I just sit down and type up the document, I said, well, I don't need this library of pre-made documents. But a lot of the stuff he has said, especially, I think it was Ahuka that talked about using the various heading sizes rather than boldface or changing the font, makes it easier for someone like Jonathan to parse through a document. And then this last week, his whole example of, if you're doing a technical document or whatever, and you're putting in, say, commands. I don't think that was the example he used, but it'd be what I might do on my show notes. That I used to do all my commands boldface, and that didn't work out so well on the website. And so Ken Fallon, your editor, comes in and says, change it to this, that you could, instead of going through, chapters and paragraphs, knows how big this document you're talking about is, that to change where something is a command line command and change it from this, I wouldn't say font, but this style, change it throughout the document to another style, and instead of just going to each one and changing it, that how you could, if you set up a style, then you could do that one time and have it done. That just was just brilliant to me.
It is an excellent show. There was one piece of feedback I did want to give. And that was, he mentioned about the difference between letters and A4, but that actually wasn't what I was referring to. When somebody in his earlier episodes, I give him some feedback that he gave the example of writing the letter. And in the US, you have a particular format. I don't know how a letter is written. You're taught that in school and it's standardized, but that is a different format. Nido, here, what is, in the Netherlands, what's the convention? You put your address on the right hand side, and then the date, and then dear sir, and then you put the address of the person you're writing to on the left hand side.
I'm sorry, I wouldn't be sure, because I use LaTeX myself if I need to write a letter, and that just puts it in the right order. But I'm seeing a lot of things which are similar with how LaTeX works, and the way that he uses OpenOffice, as opposed to how I thought OpenOffice was to be used, as to, you just change the font to what you need it to be, start typing, and change it whenever you go.
Yeah, I think he's doing it properly. I think if you follow what he is describing in LibreOffice, the jump to something as more complex like LaTeX would be a lot easier. The concepts are very, very similar.
Ken, it sounds like what you're talking about, that particular formatting, could also be done with a template. It sounds like what you need is two columns for a short while.
No, absolutely. I'm not arguing with you with that. I'm just saying that my feedback to him was to be, his show just...
You weren't talking about paper size.
I wasn't talking about paper size. I was talking about the letter, like the letterhead conventions are... A letter is a bad idea because it means the letterhead format. But say if you're writing a resume or a curriculum vitae, The style that you use in the US is completely different to the style that you use in the UK or in the Netherlands. You know, each country has its own different style for particular documents. So I was just making the point to him that when you're talking to the audience, don't assume that that I will know when you say, okay, we will do a resume, for example. Don't assume that I will know what you're talking about, because here, if I was doing a resume, I do it in a completely different format. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, no, I absolutely do. I absolutely do. When you get your letter template sorted out, you ought to upstream it so that you can it can be included in the next distribution of this when somebody selects Netherlands as their locale.
No, but those do exist. But I think my point I was trying to make was, when given an example, it's like you earlier on was saying, you were talking about middle school and, you know, when you dropped out. And that, to me, I don't know what age you are. Well, I kind of do, because I've been hanging around with Americans for so long. But to me, I don't know what age those are. So if, rather than being assuming that your listener knows about it, give the age rather than, you know, pick an example that is clear. It's a minor thing. Honest to God, it's like going up to the Mona Lisa and saying, you know, you missed a bit there in the bottom right hand corner, really. It's a minor thing compared to the quality of these shows, so let's just move on.
Yeah. So shouldn't she have been a blonde? Some people prefer blondes.
Exactly. And Nito, one of your shows, thank you very much, even though it was from Dude Man, but your initiative. And I think it'd be a nice time now for you to talk to us and tell us about the Saturday sessions.
Yes. Well, first I'd like to apologize for being a terrible host in that I rescheduled the sessions without editing the previous episodes. And if you've been online during the time specified in them and nobody was around, I apologize for my error, and I hope you do not blame the rest of the HPR crew. About the scheduled time, to specify, this will be March. The next one will be March 9, 2013 at 1700 hours UTC. So if you like to contact me about a show you want to contribute, which you need help with, or you want to say I'm going to be there or whatever, you can email me at saturdaysessions@hackerpublicradio.org, or you can just show up on Saturday.
Well, good. Because I was going to ask for some Arch help, but I didn't get organized because it would take some. I wanted to do a pace bin on, show you what I've done so far and what I still would like to be able to do.
Yeah, I just asked him for some init help, and he's like, I don't know, but I'll take a guess, and he was right along the way, so that was great, but sadly we didn't think to record that.
So I think the point of the shows, and correct me if I'm wrong, Nito, is if somebody's thinking about doing an episode or just can't get over that line to do the episode, well then come on here to the Mumble server. All the information for these episodes will be with a countdown clock on the front page of HPR, so you'll know exactly when it is in your local time, with the number of seconds, hours, minutes, days to go to the next session. If you come on right then you can just join in on Mumble and go, right, I want to talk about, anyone interested in talking about this, and I guarantee you the answer will be yes, and then simply just have them talk, and we can go, you've spoken for 5 minutes on this topic. Oh, that's interesting. What about this? What about that? And, you know, get a bit of banter going and ask the questions that you would like asked.
And which Mumble server is that? And who do we need to thank for this Mumble server being available to us?
That would be the Linux Basics server.
Yes, thanks again to the Linux Basics guys. You guys are all right, to say the least.
In particular, Jay Newsetter, because it's his server.
Oh, thank you very much. I did not know that. Can you fire that off to me in an email, please, 50?
Yeah, I didn't know it was his server either. I thought it was Terry's server.
Oh, okay. Well, every time I thank Dor says no talk, thank Jay. And
he's probably said that to me too, but I'm not so smart. You guys know that.
Maybe I've got it wrong, but that's what I thought. Who I thought he was usually crediting. I think maybe Jay Newsteader maybe does most of the administration on it there then. Well, I'll ask Dor who it is we need to thank, and I'll have that answer for you by next month, Ken.
Well, thank you. And in actual fact, I just want to take some time out here. And I know we spent a lot of time this month, you know, on about the Sonar project, but we do have to really thank the people who, you know, make all this infrastructure available to people, like Lunar Pages, for instance, for all the hosting that they give to HPR, and the bandwidth that we use is phenomenal. Like, it's not a joke. We're talking about terabytes of bandwidth, and if any of us were paying for that, you know, it's a significant amount of resources that they're just giving to us for this. Stankdog as well, every single month a significant amount of money goes out of his pockets, essentially a tablet, you know, a nice Android tablet goes out of his pocket every month to keep Binary Revolution and Hacker Public Radio up, and the folks over there at archive.org doing their stuff. And then we have people here like on the Mumble server donating this infrastructure. How many different podcasters are in there? Unsyn Studio, The Techie Geek, Sunday Morning Linux Review, Pod Brewers, Hacker Public Radio, Going Linux. You know, just an amazing amount, an amazing resource for people that I never have to worry about, you know, a place to meet. And these people are just giving it to us for nothing. And all we have...
Let me throw Droops in here, too, because he coded the original HPR page. And I know I said that the new page was an improvement, but it's not significantly different from what Droops did. And what Droops did was and is significant. So I just want to add him to that list, too. And I that doesn't mean that, you know, I think that's the complete list. I know we're forgetting dozens and dozens of people, but, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm more specifically talking about the people who are paying for hosting right now. Today in, you know, 2013, they're like, this month these guys will be out of pocket because they're keeping this infrastructure alive. It's not, the internet isn't free, you know, that is the key point, you know. And this entertainment, such as it is from me at least, sorry, I've just got an email from people saying I'm being too negative, but on myself, but this stuff isn't free. And you know, there's like a moral obligation there, I've felt, which is why I put so much time and effort into it. I get a free operating system right here on my computers that enabled me to do so much professionally and at home and you know, on the train or wherever, and this is my way of giving back. And I think if you're sitting there wondering whether you should do your show or not, I think the answer is yes, you know, give us back a show. Thanks very much.
And for all of us who are podcasters who use Linux Basics Mumble server, there is a contribute link, I believe, on the front page of linuxbasics.com. So let us not forget that. And before we move on from this last Saturday session, the only thing I mean, I love the show, but other than that, and especially since you guys talked about Arch, but the one thing I would mention about it, I was a little fused throughout the show and until the end, because the first 5 minutes were the same as the start of the other show that was taken from this Saturday session. And I sort of figured that out, because I almost jumped ahead. I said, well, I've heard this. Did I listen to it out of sequence, or did Ken post it wrong or something? But then after the theme music, then I could, it didn't take me long. No, I haven't heard this before. And at the end, somebody said, well, let's cut this off and make it its own show. So, again, if there's anybody out there who thought maybe they'd heard that show before, you haven't. So, go back and listen to it.
Thanks, 50. And it was Arch Linux from Dude Man, actually. And I haven't heard from him in a while. Is everything okay with Dude Man?
I haven't seen him in, he usually checked into this Mumble server about 1 or 2 o'clock my time on Friday nights. But since we really haven't been doing Linux Basics is coming back for a reboot, and we haven't been doing Pod Brewers, so there hasn't been anybody around at that time, so he may have gotten out of the habit, but I guess everybody can check on, he's still doing his Dude Man Avi.
I haven't heard the show.
Podcaster. He hasn't, okay, well, I guess we should drop him a line and ask him how it's going.
Indeed. But it was a good episode, and I did enjoy it. And the following day was Dan again with his show me something that I thought I knew and found out that I hadn't a freaking clue.
Yeah, I saw that on the list. I thought, okay, it's how to set the time. But then completely different in how to use it to time the efficiency of your software, or maybe compare how a process runs on one system versus a different system, or if you make a tweak, how it runs, how it runs after you make some changes. So I think it'd be, just sounds like an invaluable command for contrasting one system you get what I mean.
Yeah, even I know how to set the time. That's just apt-get install NTPD. That's an easy one.
Yes, no, this one was the time command. I thought, well, there's not a lot to say about that. You run time and then the command, and it tells you how long, your time has. And then suddenly there's this thing called user bin time, and it does so much more. So this is another example of those well-researched, well-presented shows that make me embarrassed to... he's just done a very, 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 very good series here.
I think Dan Washko is in danger of being kidnapped and held to where people can get all this information out of him and make it into a book.
They're going to turn him upside down and shake him until it all falls out? What they going to do?
That would probably, I don't know if that would work or not, but that would be a start.
If somebody catches him and holds him upside down, I'm going to come tickle him.
Yeah, you might shake some of that music out, and that wouldn't be good.
Oh, no, don't do that. Don't shake music out of him. Or
I
geo
I love
anything.
The music. Maybe it's because I listen to his shows sped up 1.8 times, so it sounds a lot better.
No, we're talking about Tilts, Ken.
I know,
yeah. The music
yeah.
he plays at the end of Tilts is
Jesus
not
penis.
Good.
I was not going to say that term, because this is usually a family show, but...
No, we got
since
rid
you
of
have.
No. Any show I'm on now, I'm deliberately dropping F-bombs, just so that people won't have to hear my voice on the non-explicit stream.
Good thinking.
My wife's gone to bed, so this show is going on a little bit.
And... the next day, let me give a little bit back. This was probably my favorite show of the month, was our very own Ken Fallon interviewing Chris, is it Condor? Condor, right?
Yep.
From Broadband for the Rural North, the Barn Project. Wow.
She's such a good, so easy to interview. And this is such a fantastic project. It's just an amazing what they've done. It's amazing. Yeah, and have you ever been on the internet and you're just clicking YouTube links and YouTube links and YouTube links? If you ever have an afternoon that you just want to lose, go and watch the videos that are linked in the show notes to this. They're just fascinating to follow.
See, I can't do that, Ken, because I don't have fiber.
Exactly. And it actually, 5150, I can't help thinking about you and Lost in Bronx and my own brother's actually living out in the sticks. And we're getting to a point where there shouldn't be a discussion about this, really. You should have a fiber connection to every home, building, whatever. And everybody should have that level of access to technology.
Well, I was so disappointed, Pokey. I found out what they were pushing underground, because I told Pokey a week ago that they were rerunning, because it's all this highway project ahead of it, they had to rerun all the power lines, and I knew they were moving the cable line, because Cox Cable comes right past my house, and the phone line trunk. And then I saw them going out in different directions, trenching along the county roads and across my neighbor's field over here one direction, and across my field where they ran the power line the other direction. And I thought, well, maybe somebody's setting up dark fiber, doing something. And I talked to one of the people who says, no, we're the power company, and we're running underground wires, and they're putting up brand new poles and new wires in exactly the same traces. I don't know what they're doing,
and
it's going to have no impact on my internet, I'm afraid.
It's probably that they're putting the power underground because it's it works better underground. It doesn't get affected by storms, and they're probably putting the poles there so that they can lease them out to telephone and internet and whoever else wants to run cables in the future, would be my guess. It's just a wild guess, though.
I will tell you something. Back in the 1970s, the telecom provider who need you all know in this country here that I live in now, were running out cables, copper cables, to every new building and every upgraded building from the local exchanges. You know, they had to run, if they had to run a new copper cable, they were running fiber optic cable along with it. And it cost 50 cents per meter more to buy these cables. And a budget person's finance person said, no, you have to stop. You have to stop doing this, and you have to go back to running regular copper cables because the 50 cents was too much to run back. And now they were in a position that if they had continued doing that, more than 75% of the country would have fiber running into their homes already.
Well, just tell Chris that anytime she wants to, she can come here and dig a trench across my property.
I was so tempted. I'm actually tempted to get my brothers and, like, we know how a spade works, you know, and head up there for a week. Because I'll tell you, that would be my idea of a relaxing week away. You know, just think about it. You get out in the country, you get to do some real, you know, physical work, go down to the pub, plug in your computer to a gigabit internet, and you're on the net.
Well, see, thing is, if I had a gigabit or if I had high-speed broadband, I would probably download less, because as it is, I download just about every new distro that comes out just in case I someday want to play with it. And, you know, if I knew that any time I wanted it, I could just click on it and it would be there, I wouldn't have to download it.
There you go. Exactly.
Well, I think that Chris herself is just an amazing person, and she's so much fun to listen to, because everything... She's very, very sensible, and no matter what you say to her, no matter what you ask her, her response just seems to be in the, well, duh, you do it the sensible way.
Yeah, exactly. I love the whole idea of the Women's Institute. I don't know if you guys got that. Do you know the Women's Institute at all? It's a organization for farmers' wives, essentially, and they actually are quite well organized, and they traditionally will go in and do the church and do the flower arranging for that, and they will, you know, have fundraising events around for various different things, and, you know, to hear that these people wanted to, yeah, I think we should be the ones doing splicing fiber. Yes, of course you should be.
Yeah, of course. Why shouldn't they be? The fiber splicing is something that's done by these, you know, people who are used to playing with threads, like she said. They're used to threading needles. Why can't they thread a fiber?
There's a movie here. I want Klaatu to go over and make a movie about this.
Yeah, for real, too. We need an Indiegogo for that, maybe. And you know, and it isn't the physical labor like digging trenches. You know, why can't the you know, quote-unquote big strong men be out digging the trenches? You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Right, and they're just so nonchalant about it, because over here, you know, and I'm sure over there, Ken, that's a sought-after skill, you know, because I've never worked with a telecom. I don't know how to do it. I would love to learn, but you know, somebody has that and wants to get a job. That's rather than having to be trained. That's, you know, that's a real marketable skill. And here's all these ladies just, yeah, we're just doing it.
Exactly. I mean to say, I find this fascinating. I've worked now in telecoms, you know, for what, 15 years or so. And, you know, it's obvious we use fiber everywhere, and but, you know, you use fiber patch cables, and you patch it into these things here, and you patch it over there, and you don't actually splice anymore. You know, nobody splices, and, you know, the dark fiber just is in the ground. It's miraculous how it got there, but, you know, there's some guys and they pull dark fiber, and that's fine. That's what they do. But that's why it's so interesting to see somebody putting the infrastructure in the ground. They're digging the holes, they're putting the pipes in, and they're putting a line to every single house.
Yeah, they do splice all the time. And you don't get to see it too much in a building like that, because you usually put those quick lock connectors on there.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen fusion splicing done once, and it is so cool to watch it happen, because the particular machine that the guy had that I saw, it had a microscopic camera in it, and you could see the fiber as the machine, you know, you feed it into both sides, and you see the machine line them up. So then you see it You see it moving on the x-axis side to side until it lines up. Then you see it moving on the y-axis side to side and lines it up. And then it brings them closer together. And then it adjusts them again, these tiny little things. And when it gets it just right, you actually, because it's a camera, it's the camera can look at it. It doesn't get hurt. It watches this fusion happen. And the whole screen just kind of, it's like a movie. It goes white, like starting in the center. You see a point of white and light. And then the whole screen just glows white. It's really, really neat to see. It was fantastic to watch happen.
I mean, I've seen it all right, but, you know, not to the level. Go to the videos. If you want to see what Pokey describes, go to the videos. You will see people doing that in the middle of a field out in Cumbria. Anyway, shall we move on? We're pushing 116 now.
We could skip the next one. It was really bad. That was just something. Like I said, it turned out I didn't need to do it. I don't know what happened, if it was a glitch or an update brought in the printer definition files into Linaro where I could find them. But by that time, I'd already done the research and gained a little bit of knowledge, and so I passed along what I had. But it was, I'm not sure if everything I said in there was entirely true, because I went from a post I found on Linux Questions that in the end I didn't really have the chance to actually test.
I did enjoy this episode, and I'm filing all your episodes under someday I will come back to that. You just know that there will be some day that you will get caught up with this and you'll need to come back to it. I did not even know that these were compressed files, that they were zipped up. So that in itself was useful information. Thanks.
Well, I don't know if the actual PPD that's created when you set up a printer that it is, because I looked at it, it's just a text file, but the post that I saw says it's expecting to see all the PPDs that are pre-installed or come with the distribution to be in a gzip file. So that, like I said, that's the part I don't know. That could be completely inaccurate.
I'd say this is possibly one of those episodes that will be listened to by many people, and about 3 people will be thanking you very, very much for having done this. But even if nothing else, your write-up on how to use cups is spot on, because it's a walkthrough on how to use cups. Great show.
Yeah, we've had cups walkthroughs before, though, so I didn't know if I was at... It's good, maybe good for a reminder for folks that haven't heard those.
I did want to correct you, though, and that is that it is an Apple product, but it's only an Apple product because they bought it. And the reason they bought it was because GPL V3 was coming out, and they did not want to have anything that was GPL V3'd. So they bought the company so that it would remain GPL V2.
Okay, I was unaware of that.
There you go. Anyway, the last show was Thistleweb from Cribbins. Aye, laddie, aye. And he was talking to us about distractionless writing, which...
Where does he come off thinking he can tell us about distractionless? He comes on every podcast and distracts everybody. I think that's the real key to distractionless writing. You get it out of your system on everybody else's shows.
Exactly, yeah. Well, he writes all day, and then at night goes on to all the other podcasts and then talks to people.
Yeah, right on. No, I love this one. He's a great guy, and I know I was probably a little bit harsh with him on the New Year's Eve show but you know, he was a little tipsy and I had a hard time letting people talk, but you know, I love Thistleweb.
This actually was quite interesting, because I had heard about these on, you know, Lifehacker and stuff for the Mac and sometimes for Windows, but I've never knew that there were these two products for Linux, and this is fantastic to have if I ever do get down to writing. So that's it. That's the shows. The next one up in the queue, looking, we have no high priority. We have no reserved episodes. We should have a reserved episode. That should be this show, actually. That's reserved for tomorrow. And the next one will be Frank Bell, OTR, and the World Wide Web, whatever that is. That is, of course, no, actually it won't be, because I just got a Lost in Bronx episode that's come in, and because Lost in Bronx is not last in, then he's first out. But it's not last in and first out, Pokey.
No, I know it isn't. You're right, it's not. It's, who knows.
Whoever, fair. No, I don't know.
It's because it's been far too long since we've heard from Lost in Bronx.
Yes.
That's right.
But in fairness, even if he posted a show yesterday, it would still be far too long since we heard from Lost in Bronx. But then again, he'd been doing a lot of shows, and I really like that book. Did you read the space one?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it sounds like he's getting very close to having Street Candles, the next novella in the series, ready.
Ooh, you make me very happy. You make me very happy. That is very addictive. You know, with some good series, the space, what was that? Half Share series. I really got into that as well.
Yeah, Quarter Share. That's Nathan Lowell.
Yeah, Nathan Lowell. Although I thought the ending to that was a bit thingy. Speaking of which, book reviews. Speaking of which, Pokey,
it's got to be revived. I have to get back on this, and we got to. I know. I'm very, very sorry. We have to do this.
We can do this on one of the Saturday episodes. Come on, it's an ideal time. Do half an hour. Do 1 hour of a regular show, and then the book review could be done.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. I can't do it this week, or I would, but yeah, we gotta get it back.
No, we're planning on it. What was the last book? It was that cowboy girl thing.
Space Casey.
Space Casey.
By Christiana Ellis.
Oh, dear, dear.
Save it.
Okay, I will.
Make sure you let me know, because I read this one.
Yeah, but what he does is he contacts the author, and the author listens to the shows. No, it's not just obscure HBR where they're never going to listen to the show. You have to go, well, the author's actually listening, so I better be very careful about what I say.
No, and not only, exactly, and that's another reason why I have to get back on this, is because I owe an author a review of his book. He actually personally inscribed a hardcover to me, and inside the hardcover it says, when are you going to review my book on the HBR Book Club?
Oh, okay, we got to do that.
Yep, absolutely have to. And actually, you guys know him. It was Scott Sigler, because he actually did a column for our Epic show. So yeah, we really owe it to him. not that I don't owe it to Christiana Ellis, because I love her books, but I owe it to him as well, and to everybody. I got to get back. I know I do. I'm very sorry I've let this languish.
No, I really love the book review thing. If nothing else, it exposes more books, audiobooks, which is fantastic. Because sometimes listening to Linux podcasts can be a bit, a change is as good as a rest. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes.
Oh yeah, I've been making some inroads about spreading Creative Commons around other folks. The healthcare worker comes in a few times a week and helps with my dad. She was talking about reading and all that, so I introduced her to podiobooks.com, and she knew who Sigler was because she's into horror movies and stuff. So, starting on getting more converts.
Very good. It's amazing, actually. I'm listening to my music now, and most of it is, CC Hits and Jamendo and whatever. And I feel guilty. I was on the IRC saying, who was I talking to? Adef Beno? I don't know if that's his handle. Talking about a song that he recommended was similar to another artist, but they hadn't released their stuff on Creative Commons. And it's like, crappy, now I'm in this situation, I'm referring to a piece of music, can't pass it on, I can't do anything, my hands are completely tied,
Yes.
Frustrating. Anyways, other stuff that's been going on, I've been messing about with the website in places. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to apologize that I don't have anything to say about Thistleweb's show. We just kind of glossed over it. I haven't heard it yet. I am behind this month. The last show I heard was yours, Ken. So, sorry, Thistleweb. It's not that I would have nothing to say. It's just I haven't gotten to it. I'm behind.
No, I just listened to it today.
I wasn't going to say it, but I'm in the same boat.
I think maybe we should not review the last week's shows and put those into the next month. How about that? We start doing that.
Oh, I don't know about the last weeks. I usually get those, though. Oh, if we're going to talk about it, Ken, usually I would, and you got to do what's got it. What works best for you, since you're on a different time schedule, but you know, usually I could download the day's show in the morning, and lately it's been kind of later in the day.
That is due largely to the fact that I post them now in the evening instead of in the morning.
And like I said, you got to do what, you know, works best into your schedule, because you're doing a way bigger share of the load than the rest of us.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Ken, what if you know, perhaps next time before we began recording, just, you know, whoever was on, just say, okay, what's the last show everybody heard, and we could stop at that point.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That would give everybody their fair due, their due time.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, we can all. I wanted. Yeah, let's do whatever's fair. So yes, there have been some website changes. I've been looking at the logs, and we've been getting, needless to say, bombarded by people. So I've been tightening up some of the pages a little, and let's see, go through the thank yous and stuff one moment. So apologies to John Spriggs for not setting up your account yet. I will be doing that. That's on the VPS server. Apologies to Mark A. Davis and Frank Bell for not posting their show on time. And apologies to NY Bill and Charles N. and J. for NY Bill. During the month, the show came out crackled and highly compressed and just, you know, completely off the wall. And when I look back, his show had been in the queue for a while, and there was a period of time where the conversion script that I was using was doing some weird stuff. So I think I've got all those shows now re-encoded correctly. So the conversion script is working better. Just a notice to everybody, I have enabled another option which does the normalization by default. So that's what happened during the week where the show was very quiet versus the intro and outro. I think it happened twice, once on one of Dan's shows, and it happened on the NUG meeting show. So hopefully that will rectify it. I would appreciate it if anybody would give me a shout if they feel that the audio quality is suffering as a result of that. And I also haven't set up the Not Safe for Work flags yet, and the reason for that is I made a complete mess of the page. I needed to, well, I made a mess of it, and I'm in the middle. I don't have time to fix it basically right now, but as soon as I do, I will get them added and fixed. Now I want to say some thanks to certain people. Dave Morris for all the QA work that he does for HPR. And for keeping me sane by times. And to Neil Wallace, aka Rolling Golfer, for the heads up about the broken links. They're in the process of being fixed. There have been a few. Obviously, when we get links in, everybody does their own show notes. Some of the links are correct, some of them are not. And I'm going back through a process of checking every link on all the pages to make sure that they're all correct. As soon as I have that done, the next thing on the list is to make sure that the website itself is correct HTML, which it is not. I am aware of that. But at least now we should have valid XML files in the feeds, and we will try and get the links working correctly, removing all the dead links and stuff like that, removing infinite loops into links, which has been fixed. So work is progressing. On the website itself, we have made some small changes. There was a request to put the link for the Og Speaks in MP3 file, and that was moved up to the top, listening Og Speaks in MP3 as well. So,
thanks to Richard Stallman for that.
No, that was been done anyway. But
oh, what did you mean? Sorry.
If you look under HPR and then the title of the show, then it's hosted by whoever, and then underneath that in small letters you have Listen and Og MP3 and Speaks. So you don't have to scroll down to the end of the show notes to the Listen Now section, which was Richard Stallman. I can't remember who asked me to do that. Cool.
Ken, you realize we took a drubbing on Tilts this week because we don't also have Opus.
Yet. I'm waiting for Epic. He's put that in my head, you know. Epicanus to give us the settings for that, and we can add it easy peasy lemon squeezy.
Hey Ken, just to, so you know, I like your service. I just emailed you and you got that done. Never had that happen before.
Well, there you go. It's the open source way. Actually, it's sad the amount of time I spend doing stuff on HBR, I suppose. But it, you know, stuff like that. If you have improvements, people have sent me requests for improvements and none of them have been thrown away. A lot of them, some are easy changes like that because it's an easy change. More of them require changes to the database and take longer to do, but there hasn't been any request that anyone's sent in that I've ignored. Inaction does not necessarily mean that I've ignored your request. It's just I haven't got to doing it yet.
I don't think anybody's holding anything against you, Ken. We know just how much work, well, I mean, we don't know just how much work you do, but we know it's an awful lot more than anybody else.
Oh, it's enjoyable. It's if people notice stuff, it's nice. There was speaking of audio encoding, there was a link on a show on FOSS Weekly some time ago about a audiophonic. It was AUPHONIC.com. And that was a audio encoding into various different formats with MP3 file, you know, with ID tags and all the rest of it. Basically, what we've written on the back end or are writing on the back end seems to have been done. If anybody on the dev team wants to have a look at that, that would be interesting. There was also some stuff on the mailing list about t-shirts and stickers and the like. I don't know, Pokey, are you more up to date on that than I am?
I know that it'd be Dave.
Yeah, I wanted to know what a good t-shirt would look like, and so I didn't get any response for that, and I actually got Richard Quirin to design a t-shirt, and I just stuck the link up and you can take a look at that, and I've actually ordered some to be sent to him for him and his daughter, and then ordered some for myself for the Linux Fest Northwest. Last year when I tried to do Pokey's t-shirt making like he does, I didn't have very good success with it and spent quite a bit of time on it and thought it'd be just better to spend around $15 for a t-shirt. And this 123 stickers where I got directed to maybe get some stickers made for the these bumper stickers. They have the t-shirts, so we're working through that. I haven't got them back to verify the quality yet, but perhaps we could have some more stuff put on them if we want some more credits in that. So, but you can see the design there, and I'll let you know how it goes with those. They should be available for anyone who wants to order them once, you know, they could from the 123 stickers, and they are fairly inexpensive, and my wife was real glad I wasn't going to be spending a lot of time the iron and stuff on the t-shirt. In fact, I spent quite a bit of time cleaning it afterwards.
For Oddcamp the last time, and it's just an awful lot of work, and it costs more in the end.
Yeah, I'm getting one of these for OCP Live. Thanks for the link.
By the way, folks, I said it before and I say it again. Richard Quirin is a god to the. These are just awesome.
Ken, I'll point out that he did, if you follow on Google Plus a bit, he did also design a small bumper sticker for laptops that I ordered some and sent some over for Northeast Linux Fest to NY Bill. But they were great. I started out with a little idea, and I mean, that guy turned my pigged up thing into a real nice looking little bumper sticker, I think. And they're on order. In fact, they've been shipped now, so we'll see how they turn out pretty quick.
Do you have a link for that? I saw it, I followed it, and I also was just dumbfounded by the guy's work.
Let me see if I can find that and get it into the
into the show notes. Just for people listening along, it's the new HBR Hacker Public Radio logo right in the center of the t-shirt at your breastplate. And then underneath that, it's Your Ideas and Projects Podcasted. He hit the nail on the head.
Which, by the way, this is a good callback to something that you mentioned, Ken, on IRC, probably in the mailing list. That had a big effect on me is you suggested that what we focus on at the festivals, if we're going to be doing tables there, is to get these projects to understand that HPR is their network also, and that they should be the ones contributing shows rather than us interviewing that. And I really, really think that's a good idea, and a good idea to be pushing forward with. If it works, if people pick it up, it gets us more shows, and it takes the load off the people who, you know, want to be making shows as opposed to promoting projects. I mean, whether or not we want, I mean, I shouldn't say that. I do still want to promote some projects, but I thought it was such a great idea that you had, Ken, and that's going to be my goal at the Northeast Linux Fest this year, 2 weeks from now, actually.
And this, I was trying to think of like a catchy logo or a catchy, you know, HPR talk to us or you with us or whatever. But he's just hit the nail on the head. Your ideas and projects podcasted. That, you know, just summarizes what we do.
Can we order these T-shirts now, Dave? Are these available yet?
Well, I just ordered some the other day, and so they're getting a screen burnt or however they do that, and then so they should be available, and you can just use my name, David Whitman or HPR. I've done no ordering over the internet. I've just called this Karen every time. I just call for sales there and talk to her, and so far she hasn't scolded me for that. So I think they're already for order. I cannot verify what the quality of the actual shirt is, and maybe if we don't like that, maybe we could work that up a little bit and for a little extra money.
Well, we've ordered stickers from them before, and their stickers are absolutely top quality. So if their shirts are as good as their stickers, I'm not worried about that. I mean, if there's some negative feedback or concern about quality, you know, we'll find out about that in the future. But so far, these guys have been excellent to us.
Dave, you have.
I'm sorry, Ken. I'm on their order page, and it asks for what is the name of your image file, and I gave it the one that Fake Dave posted. That and for the people listening, HPR_TEE01.png.
There'll be a link in the show notes.
So I don't know if that's since I've gone through to the pay page, if that means it's verified, or if it would come up, well, you know, we couldn't find it, so they send you a blank T-shirt. So maybe might be best to call in and check that up or whatever. But it at least it didn't cough up a hairball on that file name.
Well, I would say call and push the number, whatever the option is for sales, and talk to Karen. And I'm trying to get an HPR account set up there so that when people call in, if they want to order something for HPR, they'll have ability to just kind of target what they want. I know Pokey's oval stickers are in there, and the little bumper sticker thing that Richard designed for us is there, and now this T-shirt design. So that would be really good for us to try to get the HPR account set up. And they really have been friendly, and I really enjoyed dealing with them. And I should have a big stack of those stickers coming to my house, and then another stack going to not as big to Mel.
Do you know, is Klaatu's sticker available on there? He had a little square that said nosy on. I learned how to be nosy on the interwebs from HPR.
This is something I'm not sure of, and I was kind of wanting to get some copies of that too, so I'd have a little variety to give out at the Linux Fest Northwest. So we'll have to just kind of get together with her and try to get all that put together in one folder so she knows what to do for ordering that, and so it can be put on the website so it's easy to get to.
They're in images under hackerpublicradio.com/images. All that stuff's in there. Is this the highest resolution, the PNG, or does he have a PDF or some other file, SVG?
There's been some back and forth about the image, you know, what's there. But what happened was I had to work with Karen and then with Richard also to go through, so they got what they wanted to make the image real good for their screen printing and then their actual sticker printing. So I'm not really sure what's there, and that's why I want to see there be an official place to order those right out of the website there, so there isn't a mix-up. Because if you have something printed that isn't up quality, you're going to basically end up with that, and that really can be expensive.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and the trouble is the image quality, the resolution required for a T-shirt or a sticker is so high that you could send them something that looks beautiful on your screen or even print it on paper and then get it back on a sticker and it looks terrible. So they have a minimum, I believe it's 300 DPI is their minimum requirement for like a ping file. But obviously that all can be avoided with an SVG because that's the scalable image with, you know, infinite resolution.
Okay, I think, Dave, you know what you're doing, and if you don't, Richard does. So when you have this sorted, tell us, and we'll get the correct images and put them on Hacker Public Radio, our website, which that area should be more public to us anyway. There are loads of stickers up there. And if, Pokey, if you go up there, you'll be able to find the link to Plateau's one, which you can, which is actually a subsection of a much larger image. And the fonts he uses are also included in there, so that you can use the correct font.
I'll get together with Karen to make sure everything's fine. And Richard's probably a better resource than I am. I just know there's pitfalls to this. But I also am looking to get a coffee cup that would be available. But, you know, we'll see how that goes.
Oh, man, you're tempting with this stuff. By the way, this bumper sticker says the HPR, it's in black. Black background, white text. You got the HPR logo in the side, on the left-hand side. Then in bold letters, the community podcast. Underneath that, white background, black text, sharing your ideas, projects, opinions. And then underneath that, new episode every weekday. And underneath that, hackerpublicradio.org. And it looks awesome.
It does look to me like on the site, they only have the 123 stickers, they only have white t-shirts.
They actually have black with white, and Richard designed for both. So most people that I've talked to on Google Plus thought, well, maybe it was for the bumper sticker, but black with white text. And I just ordered the black with white text.
Black with white text looks cool. The both
that would be my preference, too. I'm going to have to call them.
They're brilliant.
Speaking
one
of...
One thing I'll point out here is she wasn't all that familiar with Inkscape, so I tried to do a little educating there.
Good man.
That's really funny because the guy that I talked to mentioned Inkscape when I first did. I didn't speak to my. I just emailed back and forth, but he had mentioned it to me. That's weird. Since we're discussing HPR art, if anybody, and this is, you know, not cool to mention such a company, but if anybody still has a TomTom GPS and you know how to safely update the files on your TomTom GPS. I've uploaded the HPR logo to their servers as a splash screen, so you can search for it and do that. But if you don't know how to update your TomTom already, don't touch it until you. I'll do an HPR on it eventually because you can brick that thing so easy, even using the tool that they give you to update it with. So wait till you hear that one from me, okay? Or at least just back the thing up first.
Thanks for the warning. I don't have a car, so I rely on the National Train Service to get me around. Okay, some events. During the month, I got a link from somebody with that had a website. I thought it was opensource.org to all the events that were going on, you know, with a calendar and everything, and I cannot find the link. But anyway, two events that I do know are coming up. Pokey, you're going to the Northeast GNU Linux Fest on March 16th and 17th, and the Linux Fest Northwest on the 27th of April.
And well, David's I'm not going to that one.
And David's going to that one.
Yep, and if anybody from this community is going to go to the Northeast GNU Linux Fest, you just get in touch with me because there's a bunch of us. We're going to be, you know, aside from the fest itself, they're like half-day events. The fest isn't for 2 days, so at the weekend. But there's a bunch of us getting together. We're going to go out to eat. I know a nice restaurant right near there. And we'll probably be hanging out and I don't know, maybe doing some board gaming or some other kind of stuff. So just, you know, don't be left out in the cold when you know your community's already there and there's no reason why you shouldn't come over and hang out with us.
Can also, if people are going to these fests, can you get, or at least try, and if you're having a table, get a copy of the leaflets or something if you're on the printed paper? So that we can scan them and put them up on HPR so that we have physical evidence that we have contributed to these events and stuff. The reason being that if we ever do get to a day where we have a Wikipedia web page, which actually should never happen because nobody is allowed to edit.
that's right.
HBR's web page, and I'll have to get to you before. If I find out you're a listener, then you owe me a show. So from that moment on, you're contaminated and cannot edit our web page, Wikipedia web page. So I doubt we'll ever get one. But if you are going to these things. Then can you please, just give us, if it's on the brochure or something, or take a photo or something so that we know we have physical evidence that that we have been represented there.
Will do, and I'll extend an invitation to anyone to stop by the Linux Fest Northwest Hacker Public Radio table also and say hello.
Super duper. What else have I got on here? Not a lot on my docket. Has anyone got anything else that they want to share with us?
One thing I got for the event thing, I'm wondering if anybody likes the idea, would we be willing to, you know, pass a hat around and take up a little collection so that we can add a decent recorder to the conference kit? Because I lost every interview I did last year because my recorder, you heard the one that I published. I didn't lose the recordings, but the quality of them is so bad. They're unlistenable. So that, you know, that thing just didn't work. But if we had a real recorder, something that was easy to use, like one of the H1s or something, that we could send around with the conference kit so that anyone who was willing to do this would already, that would be there available to them. You know, that's something I'm willing to throw some money at, but it's a thing that I can't afford to purchase the whole thing and then just send it off, you know.
Yeah, Roger.
Not knowing if I'm ever going to see it again. Which is fine, you know, whatever happens to it, but I can't assume the whole cost myself. So if it's something that folks are interested in, you know, this would be the one for North America or for the US, I guess.
Yeah. One thing there, I do have a spare brand new Sansa clip, which I'll send over to you for the backup.
No, that's what I used last year was the Sansa clip, and I got one that just, I should have tested it first. I got
a bad one. Yeah. Okay, well, continue to get that fixed because I found my Sansa clip saved my butt several times when I forgot to press record. So
Yeah, and I
make
have...
sure you ship one of those with the case as well. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But
yes,
it's a good idea, Pokey. Good idea, Pokey. Yeah, I'll throw a few shekels your way for that.
Well, no, you hang on to your shekels for the European recorder because you're going to need that for your conference kit.
Oh, I have one here, and I plan to be at every European conference.
I'll throw a few quid in, Pokey. I've always wanted to say that. I don't know what a quid is.
Yeah, I don't either. No, Dave, you've thrown in enough cash.
There we go. This is a not safe for work episode. Thank you very much, Dave. You've ruined it for everybody. Are you happy now with your potty mouth?
Very good.
Oh, man, there could have been kids listening to you say quid, Dave.
I just.
They should have been warned by Ken earlier.
Sorry, I am pure American.
No, quid is not a naughty word.
Beep. I heard on Hacker Public Radio it was.
All right, we got to wrap this up. Where did Sonar wind up?
Sonar wound up with a total of, let me see.
$9,808. The goal was $20,000, so sadly we did not meet the full goal, but happily... this was not a all-or-nothing fundraiser, so the Sonar Project did get the $9,808.
They did, and I'm very happy about that. And 256 people contributed, which I'm also happy about. Several people, multiple times. Thanks, Dave. And
the fact that Jonathan found maybe some development partners on the better quality voice voter or whatever. Did that come out on this show, or maybe it was when he was talking about it on Tilts this week, so people might not have heard it. So it looks like it may not be as expensive for him to make improvements on, and I'm blanking on it, the Orca. Voice that Pokey had so much, yeah, that, well, it's not exactly Orca, it's the voice translation that it's based on, but Orca mainly reads the stuff, but
E-speak?
I mean, it's the part... eSpeak, that's what we're, yeah, to do either replace or improve eSpeak. If it wasn't on here, it must have been on Tilts. I heard that there was somebody, not an open source, but willing to go open source, that was working towards a voice translation program. So I should have got my facts better organized, but it sounds like he may be able to do what he was wanting to do with the money that was collected.
I want to thank all the other, as much as I'd like to take, you know, HPR take the credit for it, no, there was lots of podcasts who were putting the word out. Lots of people were blogging about this, were hitting, you know, G+ and Twitter, you name it. People were putting the word out. So, I mean, when Jonathan and I recorded that show, I think he had the fundraiser was up to about $2,500. So as much as I like to say, wow, it was because of that show we did that we raised another $7,000. That's not the truth. There was a lot of people who came together, a lot of community effort. And I want to thank all those other podcasts and bloggers and Twitterers and G+ers as well, that it all helped.
Absolutely. I would like to just make the comment, though, that and I met it in one of the other episodes, there's 256 people who actively put their hand in their pocket. And I can understand that there maybe might be another 256 people who went, look, I don't have the money, or will go, well, I don't want to contribute to that project for one reason or another. But, you know, even if whatever about the number of people who listen to our show, and there's probably a lot of crossover to listen to other shows, he's been on every show, have been pimping it, and still only 256 people put their hand in the pocket. What's wrong? What went wrong here, folks?
Well, Ken, I have to agree. I don't know what's going on there, but I do think the project is far more valuable than what we see for donations.
I mean, go ahead, Poke.
I was just going to say, I'm not sure. I don't know what happened. I know that there is. Or appears to be anyway, some hard feelings between the Sonar Project and the was it Vinix? No, shoot, I don't know what it was. Was it? It seems like they see Sonar as a fork of their own efforts, which I don't think is at all what's going on, but you know, maybe that had something to do with it.
Well, that's fine.
I hope not. But I don't know what went wrong. It's like I said, that the part that breaks my heart is that people don't care that there's a giant group of disenfranchised people. It's one thing if you don't know about it, but we pimped the hell out of this. And I don't mean we HPR, I mean we, the entire community of podcasters, we pimped the hell out of this thing. And then there's still people who just don't care. And that's the part that I found crushing.
I mean, there can't be that many Vinix users listening to Hacker Public Radio, or we would have an episode about it, and we haven't. So,
take that.
You know, and okay, and I've become comfortable with the idea that only about 10% of people who listen to this show actually contribute, or ever probably will contribute. But that doesn't stack up to the number of people who listen to Linux Outlaws, for instance. They follow the stats. They know how many people listen. And the numbers they were saying over there, it doesn't even begin to be a percentage of the number of, you know, it's a pathetic percentage. I mean, if you were walking down the street along a busker would have a greater percentage of people throwing them a few quid than that. It's just shocking to me. It really is.
I imagine by busker you must mean a beggar or a panhandler.
No, I mean somebody, a street musician.
Oh, right on, okay.
You know,
I was really sad thinking that I saw where people had gotten an extraordinary amount of money for doing a horror film on there, and then to think that we can't lend someone a hand who would otherwise maybe be productive, except they have this obstacle in their way that we could help solve that problem. I was really not feeling good about that, but I do feel good about the fact that this is a pioneer project and that we've got a good start on it.
Absolutely. Okay, and we'll move on from it. Obviously, I'm, you know, pet peeve about this, but that's fine. One other thing is that it is late here, and we're an hour and 59 minutes. Of course, when we remove silences, it'll be a lot less than that.
Yeah, it'll be down to an hour and 57.
But oh yeah, I did want to say I the more I'm thinking about Jonathan's approach, and I haven't spoken to him yet about this, but I'm thinking what we actually need is links to be to understand JavaScript. You know, one of those links browsers, e-links or whatever, to be accessible. Because we have email, we have everything else. So if we could make that understand JavaScript, then you could have a command line experience, you know, a better command line experience on the internet, and that surely would benefit everybody, including, you know, those of us who like to have an SSH session open at work.
Could be.
You know, think about it. You have an SSH session open at work, and you know, you can suddenly get access to Gmail better. And beyond Facebook, not that I would be, but I do like e-links for the fact that it's clean, there's no images or whatever, and if you do get an image, you can right-click on it, and it'll come up, if you're running an X session, it'll come up in a browser, or, you know, in your image display program, so you can see what that image is if you really want to, or right-click open in a graphical browser. And if that application was more, I don't use it that much because, like Dillo or something like that, that doesn't understand JavaScript very well, you know, it's becoming less and less useful in today's web. Make that work, Jonathan?
I have good news for you. Apparently, e-links already has the possibility to have JavaScript support. And if I read this correctly, or if you have it compiled with the JavaScript linked in, then you can open Emacs, like Escape, Settings, Option Manager, ECMA script, open, activate, and then it should work. Or at least that's what I'm seeing from this Linux questions thread.
Could you post that into the thingy here so that I can put that into the show notes, please, Nito? You've made me a very happy man. Okay, folks, unless anybody else has anything else to add, 2 hours, 1 minute, 54 seconds.
But it's brief. The last thing on our list here is that we need more shows. And if anybody doesn't know what they need to or what they can make a show about, they don't have an idea, but they know that they have the technical capability of recording and uploading to an FTP server, we have a list of requests for shows, things, these are topics that people would really love to hear about. And I'm going to add a couple of things to that list right now because I'm a little bit stumped by a couple of things. So I'm going to ask Ken to add these to the list.
I need to know as well, will you?
Yes, I will. I need to know about VPN. How do I set up a VPN to my home network? I tried looking at it, and all I got was a bunch of warnings about why VPN is too complicated for me when I Googled for that. So what do I need to know? What do I need to be aware of? So if somebody could do a how-to on VPN, also on init scripting, getting those things to run properly, that seems to be a pretty big topic that, you know, I've gone as deep as I can, and I'm coming up mostly empty-handed, or systemd setting that up to get stuff to run. That,
yes, systemd, if somebody could do a show on that, I'd appreciate it big time.
Yeah, for instance, I've got, you know, some stuff on my server that I, you know, was not available for my distribution, so I compiled it myself and edited some init scripts to make it work, and it's just not starting up when I turn my computer and I start it manually, and I just don't know what I'm doing wrong, and I'm not sure what questions to ask Google to get it working right. But as a for instance, so, you know, if you guys could take a look at that list of shows that people are requesting for ideas, or if you just want to get together with a buddy and geek out and post that as a show, I mean, this is what we're looking for.
Well, I'm sure Pokey could get an interview with Leonard, and he could explain systemd to us.
Yeah, slap him about the face as well.
Well, the interview thing works a little bit better if you can understand what the person is saying, if you have some understanding of what's going on. I mean, I'd love to hear Nito interview Leonard because he would understand this stuff, you know, better than me. You know, I could talk to Richard Stallman, for instance, because I understand what he's saying when he talks about the legal side of stuff. Now, I may have gotten some of the stuff wrong as to how he wanted me to phrase it or whatnot, but I understand the legal side of it maybe a bit more than someone who doesn't want to understand the legal side of it. So that was easy for me to do. And I got another interview coming up that I've recorded and have yet to edit. I'm almost done editing it, where I can talk that guy's language too. So that's the way that that goes. But yeah, an interview, anything you like. We need shows. We're real low, guys. We and ladies, we need some help here keeping Hacker Public Radio alive. Don't let this thing take ill again like it did.
And remember, the more shows you submit, the less chance 5150 has of putting his next show on.
You want to stop recording right now.
Also, the other way around, if you have a subject and you are not really sure whether or not it would make a good show for Hacker Public Radio, Ken, didn't you make a very special page on HPR for that?
Yes, I did, actually. I can't find the link. One second.
Yeah, I had the same problem, but I'm sure it would be a good idea to find it and put it in the show notes later.
So it's hackerpublicradio.org. Link will be in the show notes. will-my-show-b-of-interest-to-hackers.html.
I think I can guess. All right, Ken, if you try to close the show now, I won't stop you.
Okay, folks, that's it. That's another episode of Hacker Public Radio. How easy could it be? You just press the mic. By the way, if you are a bit scared of recording, we have updated the contribute page. I don't know if I spoke about this last month, but I've tidied up the text of the contribute page a little bit. So it shows basically how to do the use the phone numbers to record a show, talk to us, send your name and email address. Then we go into just recording with a portable media player, what you should look for, and a very, very, very basic setting for using Audacity. And that's pretty much it, folks. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for contributing, all those who contributed to the Sonar project. I really appreciate it, especially if you, even if you didn't, weren't one of the 256 people who contributed, but did spread the word. We do appreciate it. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for all the support that we get, and thank you very much for doing shows. Now is a good time to send in some shows. We do appreciate it. And remember, tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of Hacker Public
Radio.
Radio.
Radio!
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Share Alike, 3.0 license.